ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
These are complex problems and they require a full solution.
The Prime Minister is visiting Alice Springs today to discuss solutions to civil unrest and crime. You might remember some pretty violent scenes at a local pub there after the death of a teenager in a car accident. You're going to hear from a local Aboriginal elder in Alice in a minute who says that unrest was about a clash of cultures. And
the people we see tonight, most of those people are sleeping on the street either in tents or under roofs in certain areas or in some caravans.
Last week, we were talking about some councils cutting red tape around tiny homes to address homelessness. Well, one council in northern Tasmania has been criticised for not doing its part. More on that in 6 minutes. G'day, Jono Kendall here, talking with you from Gunai Kurnai country in Sale, Victoria, broadcasting on your radio, online and the ABC Listen app. This is Australia Wide. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is in Alice Springs tonight. You might remember some violent incidents made headlines late last month, including a group of 70 people attacking the Todd Tavern in Alice's CBD after a memorial ceremony for a teenager who died in a car crash. That led to the Northern Territory government invoking emergency powers, deploying more police, and ordering a youth curfew that lasted 3 weeks. Well, that curfew was lifted a fortnight ago. William Tilmouth is a Narunda elder and chairperson of Children's Ground, a First Nations organisation working to end injustice and disadvantage. G'day there. Now, can you explain what's been happening in Alice over the past few weeks?
What you're seeing is a sort of clash between two cultures in regards to how they deal with punishment. It's a different kettle of fish to the Western model.
So do you think there needs to be some kind of hybrid model of how people are dealt with when they do commit crimes?
I don't know whether hybrid is a word, but it's a combination of both, but it's an understanding that needs to happen.
Well, this was a youth curfew, but it wasn't just the youth who were committing crime, was it?
No, there was adults involved, there was a whole heap of other people involved, so yeah. I mean, how do you define youth? I mean, kids in this town don't have much space to go to at night, and there's not many places that will cater for them because, one, they don't have the wherewithal or the money to go to places like the cinema or whatever, so they just congregate in little social groups in the street.
Did you agree with that curfew, that youth curfew that, I mean, it's been 2 weeks since it was lifted, but did you agree with it?
I agree with it as a short-term measure, but that's about all.
So if you were sitting down for dinner this evening with Anthony Albanese, what would you say to him? What would you be asking for or recommending?
I would recommend that more of the same just doesn't work. There has to be a new approach to how things are done. It's about giving ownership and control back to and community-driven processes, not top-down prescribed solutions, which is par for the course and has always been with Aboriginal affairs. Is somebody in Canberra will sit back and make a decision that, and they know nothing about you or your life.
How do you think Alice Springs has changed over the past few years?
It's become more commercial. It's become more money orientated, and ultimately, at the end of the day, it's the dollar that drives this town. I mean, it's the Aboriginal dollar that contributes vastly towards the economy of this town, and yet it's that dollar that is not respected, or the people is not respected for what, or are taken for granted in many, many ways.
The Northern Territory government has a goal of boosting the territory's population from 250,000 to 300,000. This is by the year 2030. So they want to add 50,000 people to the population. Would you like to see more residents, more people moving to the Northern Territory?
Look, it adds to the flavour of the territory, but in terms of opportunity, jobs, that sort of stuff, housing is a big problem. It's a quagmire of a lot of social issues, including the increasing and damning statistics of closing the gap. Those sort of things really need to be considered in entirety.
And listening to you speak, right now. You've spoken a lot about the economy and jobs. Do you think that is a key way to close the gap and to improve outcomes for Aboriginal people?
Well, yeah, Aboriginal people have a right to work and to employment, and yet most of it is centred in the centre. In most towns in all across Australia, it's the towns that control the centre of the economy. The remote areas and urban areas are sort of floundering on the sidelines, you know. So, yeah, I can see that. That happens. And what happens in Alice Springs happens in Tennant Creek, happens in Katherine, happens in Borroloola, happens in small towns in New South Wales, wherever. It's the same thing, you know. It's that crush of people coming in and no opportunity for the existing population.
Do you think economic improvement equals social improvement?
Economic improvement comes with also the truth-telling about the economy as well. And there needs to be a whole lot of truth that needs to be talked about. And the contribution that Alice Springs Aboriginal people make, Central Australian Aboriginal people make, is enormous. It's second to the tourist industry. And when the tourist industry dries up and dies down, it's the mainstay of the economy. And so you're looking at royalties, you're looking at organisations spending locally, you're looking at Aboriginal people shopping locally, Aboriginal people coming to and from the town of Alice Springs because it's a service centre of Central Australia. There's a whole heap of issues in and around that. And the trouble with Aboriginal people is, you know, you're highly visible when you've got your royalties in your hand, but once that's gone, you become highly invisible.
William Tilmouth, an Arunda elder from Alice Springs and chairperson of Children's Ground, a First Nations organisation working to end injustice and disadvantage.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
You're listening to Australia Wide. Remember, you can always email us. We'd love to hear what's happening in your part of the world. australiawide.radio@abc.net.au. And stay tuned if you've ever been to the south coast of New South Wales. One very famous deceased local is getting a bit of a spruce up, not before his bones have been put in the right order. If you're wondering what I'm talking about, all will be revealed. Let's head to Launceston in northern Tasmania now, where a charity has come up with an innovative way to provide desperately needed accommodation for people experiencing homelessness. But it says the council is putting up barriers to the project. 7 sleeping pods are ready to be rolled out, but currently sitting empty, with the charity accusing the local council of not providing support. Launceston City Council says the charity needs to provide a detailed proposal and risk assessment so it can assess the project's feasibility. Ashley Barraclough has more.
And does anyone want hot food?
As the sun begins to set in Launceston, volunteers are hitting the streets to feed the city's homeless population. One of them is Sean McEntee, who volunteers with homelessness charity Strike It Out.
So the people we see tonight, most of those people are sleeping on the street either in tents or under roofs in certain areas or in some caravans as well near the silos. But essentially they're on the street, so they don't have facilities really. I mean, they haven't got running water, toilets, any of those sort of things.
I head out with the volunteers to a local cafe called Busy Bee, which is donating some food.
Do you need a bag for those ones?
No, we should be right. We've got some baskets in the car.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye, have a good night.
Then we hop back into the car and head to a disused tram yard.
Greg, do you want a hot soup?
That's where we meet Greg Davey, one of the people staying there.
Well, lucky the council let us come in here. We've got power and everything. We've got shelter. We've got a fire pot. But most other people are not so lucky. They're in tents and, winter time is going to be very hard for them.
He says one of the big issues with being homeless is not having a safe place to store things.
It's a dog-eat-dog here, those. They're just ripping each other off left on the scene. It's usually the ones that haven't got much. They're taking all their stuff and money in it. I don't get involved, I see what goes on.
Strike It Out has come up with a way to provide 7 people with a safe and warm place to sleep at night.
The organisation's founder, Kirsten Ritchie, takes me to a storage facility. She's showing me 7 sleeping pods that have been fitted into a mobile trailer. The trailer's equipped with solar panels, so the pods are supplied with electricity, and another trailer contains 2 showers.
So we'll make sure we'll have enough water in there to give them showers down there when we go down there. So it's all gas, hot water, again solar battery powered.
But the trailers are sitting at the storage facility, and no one's been able to use them.
We've got winter, we're coming into winter, and there's still no action.
Strike It Out has been trying to secure a site for the trailers, but Kirsten says the Launceston City Council won't come to the table.
I've invited them all out here to come and see our infrastructure, see what we've built, and maybe then they can see for themselves. You know, it is ready to go. And like, and at the end of the day, be proactive, and we're here to help our community members. That's what we're here for, workers' community, and I feel like they're not.
The council says the charity needs to submit a detailed written proposal, including a risk assessment. It says it will then be able to investigate the project's feasibility and ensure it meets safety requirements. But Kirsten says she's already provided a proposal. Last year, Strike It Out expressed interest in a site where an old kindergarten used to be.
So again, we were getting our hopes up. I was so excited. I was like, yes, so hopefully, you know, this would be a great opportunity for us. And so we've had to wait all these months, like 8 months later, to now find out, no, sorry, you weren't successful. So now we're back to square one again.
She sent the proposal to the council at that stage.
Have they actually read our proposal? Have they actually looked into it? Because then they might actually see too that all the risks that are involved with our project, it stipulates what we've done in tick boxes in that proposal.
Back at the old tram shed, Greg Davey says he strongly supports the sleeping pod project. He's planning to apply for a rental soon, but believes the project would make a big difference for others sleeping on the streets.
Because, like, they've got a warm bed, completely air-conditioned lights, you name it, and they've got secure, they can lock it down and come in and out and go down the ramp. They've got their own lockers down the back, and they've got a 24/7 security guard with it. They couldn't get a better setup, but they keep blocking it and won't let it put it anywhere.
Greg Davey ending that report from Ashley Barraclough.
All around the country, you're on ABC Australia Wide.
I eat corn sometimes and my mum cooks it in the oven.
Well, Charles, how much rain did we have? He said, no, none. I said, you're mad, man.
ABC Australia Wide.
Because I came from Wynyard area where it rains and rains and rains. And when it's not raining, it's raining more.
On ABC Radio.
This next story discusses suicide, and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised it contains the name of a person who has died. A woman who lost her 21-year-old son to suicide is campaigning for urgent improvements to mental health services in Western Australia's Pilbara region. Christy Grabenhofer says her son, Macklin Felix, was let down by a lack of support in the mining hub of Karratha. Rosemary Murphy has more.
Macklin was born in Karratha. He has spent his whole life here. Loving, happy, talented person that everybody that ever met him adored him. He had a great passion for art and drawing and football and working. He just qualified as a machinist, got his trade for that. Had lots of things going for him, but unfortunately struggled with mental health for probably most of his life, but it became very prominent after he had his gallbladder removed a year ago. Once he had his gallbladder removed, he could no longer work for, 6 to 8 weeks. So his depression was exasperated. He became very withdrawn. Took me 2 referrals to get him actually seen by mental health. In between that, there was plenty of ED visits, medication changes.
Christy Grafenhofer's son took his life earlier this year. She says a lack of specialised mental health services in the regional city is letting down community members when they are most in need.
There needs to be a support where if you're feeling like you're not coping, We need residential psychiatrists. We need a inpatient facility.
A petition started by Ms. Graffenhofer for the service, which attracted more than 2,000 signatures, was tabled in the WA Parliament in recent weeks. Karratha Mayor Daniel Scott says a similar step-up, step-down facility has been proposed for many years.
Back in 2015, it was a line budget item, so it was budgeted by the then Liberal government. Yeah, the money was put aside and they planned on building a step-up, step-down facility here in Karratha. And then in 2017, and when the Labor government came into power, they sent the Mental Health Commission up here to identify a site. A site was identified in Millerswell, which was opposite the primary school, and the community at the time rallied and had a petition as they didn't think that was a suitable site for this facility. So then as a city, we sort of went about and found alternate locations. So we thought, well, we'll help the community and the state to see if there's other locations throughout the city. So we went and identified 7 to 8 different locations, said, here's some alternate locations that you could look at. In 2018, the state government chose Gregory Way as the preferred site. So then the city went about and put in the infrastructure, water and power, and then sold that site to the state in 2019. So since 2019, that piece of land for that step-up, step-down facility has just been sitting there waiting.
WA's Health Minister Amber Jade Sanderson says the state government remains committed to the project and help is available at the local emergency department.
There is support in the emergency department for people who are presenting, support both in the hospital but also through the emergency telehealth service that WACS runs via the command centre, which can get, which you can have access to consultant psychiatric assessment if required.
Charlene Senior is the manager of a service provider in the Pilbara and says suicide is an ongoing issue in the local community and has a devastating impact.
We've had the suicide prevention coordinator and we've had a suicide postvention coordinator. Those roles used to have just one full-time equivalent, so one worker, and they now have four. So things have been changing. There's more programs that are coming into the region, but change is slow. And when it comes to suicide, there's just no time.
Ms. Graffenhofer says she'll continue to campaign for improved services.
People wouldn't know that I have mental health issues because I do the things that I do. I sing, I teach, I come across as confident. On the inside, they don't know what's happening. So the message I've been trying to get out is there's too many people that are ignorant about mental health. And I think the more that we talk about mental health and how prominent it is, the easier that everybody can start coping together. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure that this doesn't happen to anybody else because our son should still be here.
That was Karratha mother Christy Graffenhofer ending Rosemary Murphy's report. And if this story has raised some concerns for you or anyone you know, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. You're listening to Australia Wide.
I didn't know Melbourne much. I knew where the racecourses were.
I'm making signs for the sleepy lizards.
Basically less eggs this year than what we would have expected.
The houses that are near the edge of the bush, they might encounter a snake up to 4 times a year, a death adder.
See how it goes.
On ABC Radio. The skeleton of a famous killer whale, or orca, on the New South Wales far south coast has been given a makeover. A museum in the town of Eden had long housed Old Tom's skeleton, and his legendary tale of leading a pod of orcas to work alongside whalers to hunt baleen whales early last century in Twofold Bay. It's an incredible account of whales and humans working together that's been studied worldwide. So it was a challenging task for volunteers and experts who had to carefully restore more than 200 of his bones in a matter of days and give Old Tom a new look. Adrienne Reardon has this report.
I know what you're thinking. Is this what a museum normally sounds like? Drills, screws and wires are laid out on tables, along with plastic gloves, brushes, sponges and tape. And next to them are dozens and dozens of old bones, labelled and tagged.
It's all happening. Old Tom is on the move. Yeah, he's
We're pulling him apart and relocating him and suspending him from the ceiling.
That's Angela George, the Eating Killer Whale Museum's collection manager.
We've closed the museum down for the week, which is a highly unusual thing. Like, normally we're only closed Christmas Day and that's it. So because Tom's such a precious part of the collection, you know, we need to make sure that he's protected the whole way through the process.
Before his death in 1930, old Tom led a pod of orcas known as the Killers of Eden that helped humans hunt baleen whales. His skeleton has long been based at the museum in Eden, but it's been decided the star attraction needs a makeover. No pressure, though.
He's one of a kind, absolutely, but Eden takes its identity from the killer whales. You look around town and the town's logo is the killer whale. The primary school has whales as their logo. The town soccer team is the killer whales. The town AFL team are the Whalers. You know, it's such a big part of the town's identity, and it all harks back to Tom, you know, and his mates. So he's the town, basically. He's very precious to Eden's sense of identity, and I'm just hoping that nothing goes wrong, because I'm envisaging that I'll be hunted down and drawn and quartered if something happens to him.
Museum experts and volunteers had less than a week to move more than 200 bones from the ground to the air. The skull alone weighs about 60 kilograms. Each bone was individually examined by experts on site, and old Tom was found to be in pretty good nick, according to conservator Frances Patterson.
So overall, he's actually in really good condition for a specimen. We've noticed a few sort of hairline cracks, some very minor losses, but overall nothing significant or structural that we've had to worry about there. So our kind of work has focused on mainly cleaning. Bones have been joined with sort of fencing wire and old copper wire. In one instance, there was a nail that had been bent around to secure one of the rib bones. So what in the process of removing those, there have been some holes in the bone left behind. So we've been using Japanese tissue paper and some tweezers and syringes to inject conservation adhesive into that, to those holes. Some of the bones have been adjusted and we've had to do some retouching with the paint. We could spend endless hours, you know, addressing every kind of flaw and imperfection that we've come across, but really the net result here is about making Tom look well cared for, but also respecting his age and the history that he has as well.
Although the conditions of his bones were fairly good, his anatomy was not. Turns out, some of old Tom's bones were in the wrong spot. Moving him to a new location was a chance to fix that and present him in a more natural swimming pose. Museum preparator Dean Smith was just the person to do that.
Obviously, he was very straight. No anatomy, no anatomical swimming pose in him, really. Things like the hyoids, which are bones in your throat, totally wrong, dismounted in the wrong way. The flippers are around the wrong way. The finger bones that you'll see on his hands, really, the same as ours, because we're mammals as well. And there was only four laid out. And being a mammal, we have five. We pulled every bone off and readjusted them all 15 times until we got it correct. I also assessed the mounting points, because some of the wires they used were copper, and copper corrodes, and it actually failed. We pulling bones and it failed. So if old Tom was to hang using those old copper wires, very highly likely that some bones would just drop. We've put new armature through, new wires, and any wire that's touching bone now has a silicon tube over the top.
It was a challenging task, but after 6 days and a few sleepless nights, the crew at the museum managed to put old Tom back together and hoist him up in his new hanging display.
Congratulations, everyone. That's incredible.
Awesome job with the goosebumps.
He looks very happy there, doesn't he?
He does.
But the job couldn't have been done without the help of dozens of volunteers. Local resident John Matheson was very hands-on with the relocation and was proud to help out.
You don't do this every day of your life. This skeleton is known all over the world. There's people all over the world that speak about old Tom. It's a very iconic part of Eden's history. And look, I've got grandkids, and they will love to come and have a look at this and just see, wow, look what Poppy did.
Good one.
Good one all round, eh?
Yeah.
What an effort, eh?
Eden Museum volunteer John Matheson there, ending that report from Adrienne Reardon. And that's Australia-wide for this Monday. Don't forget, you can listen back to this program via the ABC Listen app or just search online for Australia-wide. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Have a great night.
ABC Listen.